in a stadium rich with tradition.
We have that here, and it reeks. And when you come in, teams take the field, they can feel it.
The lights shine the brightest.
Definitely playing at Camp Randall is one of the best places to play in college football.
This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, and The Athletic's Jesse Temple on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
And welcome into The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network. I'm Zach Heilprin, joined by The Athletic's Jesse Temple, and football is back, kind of. Practice started for the Badgers this morning, Thursday, and we had media day yesterday, but everything's starting to get ramped up. Only, what, 29 days away from the season opener down in South Florida?
This is very exciting, but I feel like people started counting down at 100 days. There should be a cutoff where you're actually allowed to start counting down, and this would, to me, officially be it.
Well, yeah, because they actually have helmets on and they're out on the field. We saw passes, we saw runs, we saw people catching the ball. It was very, very entertaining for the first 30 minutes of practice.
When you've been starved of football since spring practice for 3+ months, I'll take a half hour of stretching and drills.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot to get to, including which we had media day, which was an hour worth of being able to talk to anybody you wanted to, save for a player or two. And then today, obviously, the 30 minutes of practice. We'll start with the practice a little bit. Anything at all stand out to you there in that first 30 minutes? I mean, there was one position, not even move, but like a Seth Kearns, who was at safety, then at inside linebacker, is now working with the tight ends a little bit. That is not necessarily a position change, but they're just working him there. There were some injuries of guys that aren't there, Gabe Lloyd being one of them, the tight end. But for the most part, there wasn't much there, was there?
Yeah, I certainly don't want to read too much into the first 30 minutes of the first fall camp practice, but just some general observations. One thing that did stand out to me was watching Jonathan Taylor and how he handled himself around his teammates. I was paying attention. You know, we were standing right by. Jonathan requested that they get the gun out so you have somebody fire passes out of this machine and you know, you run in place and you catch the ball. And he was talking to Brad Rashaw and I believe Julius Davis as well and kind of leading that group. And then he was talking to John Budmeyer, wanted to know when the running backs could go over there and start working with the quarterbacks. And when they did do that, I saw him talking a lot to some of the other running backs and Budmeyer, and I think the quarterbacks as well. And so I just think, even though that's a very small sample size, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jonathan taking that next step, and part of that evolution is being more of a vocal leader. I know in talking to running backs coach John Settle, that was one thing that he wanted to see. And so that's important because your best player, people want to listen to him, and he's the hardest worker. So I think that was encouraging to start.
It was good to see him because he was not at media day yesterday. He was able to make it for the family fun day, which is probably the more important aspect of the two. But I'm wondering what they're going to do with the team photo. Because they took the team photo without their best player. So I don't know how they're going to work that.
Photoshop is a beautiful thing.
It I is, mean, but they have a rough history with photoshopping. the school does a little bit, you know what I mean? Like a different situation, obviously. We'll see how they want to do that. But either way, Jonathan Taylor, a key. The quarterbacks, got to see them throw a little bit, but the reps, they went to team as we were walking out. I'm not even sure we were supposed to be seeing that, but I think it's irrelevant because we'd see it in a few days anyways. But Jack Cohn was with the ones, and Graham Mertz was with the twos. And we saw Graham Mertz a little bit with the ones right at the end there, but I think that's what it's going to be. And in talking to John Budmeyer yesterday, the quarterback's coach, he said, you know, I asked him about how the reps are going to work out because you're not going to be able to get the same reps to every single person. So how do you do it? And he said, it's based on what you did in the spring. That's the foundation. These 5 days where you're installing the offense, which is what is going to happen, it's going to be what happened in the spring, and it'll build and build. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it's going to stay, but that's the way it's going to start. He said, you're going to have opportunities to go up and get more reps. You're going to have opportunities to lose your reps. And I think, again, it's going to be between those two guys, but I think it's pretty clear that Jack Cohn has a leg up.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And obviously, it's pretty clear that this coaching staff thinks very highly of Graham, and rightfully so. And even when we were in Chicago at Big Ten Media Days, when we were talking to Paul, he met with about 7 local beat reporters. And I can't remember specifically what the question that was asked. I asked him something to the effect of, like, did you have kind of wow moments when you saw Graham in the spring? And the answer was yes. It wasn't a very long answer. But when he elaborated later, he said something like, you kind of get a picture in your mind as a coach when you see him do something. You think, oh, if he can put it all together, basically, what will he be? But you don't want to fall into that trap because that's not the player that he is now. So Now, I thought those were actually pretty strong comments for Paul to make, that you can see the potential in Graham. It's all there, and this is one of the big questions coming into fall. I mean, I thought it was hilarious that you've got online betting websites laying even odds 5-6 between Jack Cohn and Graham Mertz, who's going to be Wisconsin's starting quarterback. I mean, this is kind of a national storyline just because of the name that Graham Mertz is. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in the fall because the potential's there, but it's like, how long is it going to take for him to get to the level where they feel like he would actually be the best quarterback?
Right. And I thought when Paul was asked about experience and the importance of experience by Tom Oates on Thursday or on Wednesday during media day, I thought that was an important thing to note because it is. If you go back and look at what the last time Paul started a quarterback as an OC or a head coach that didn't have some experience, whether it was two games like Bart Houston or it was something more, it hasn't happened. Like, it doesn't happen. And so, to me, that's a situation where Jack Cohn has an even greater advantage than Graham Mertz. He pushes him up a little bit even more because Paul Chryst has a history of it, and it just hasn't happened.
And I feel like if
I'm talking about opening day starter.
Yeah.
Opening day starter.
And so I was going to extrapolate off that point. I mean, I feel like if it's even remotely close between the two, I mean, let's say it's close to even, that they would go with Jack Cohn because of that experience factor. You cannot deny the value of that, even though Paul made a point to say while he is the most experienced, it's not like he's got a ton of experience, but he does have those four starts. Everything we've been talking about all offseason, the leadership, the confidence, the way the other quarterbacks look to him, I think that matters. But again, just because he is the opening day starter, if that is what happens, that doesn't mean that's how it's going to play out down the road during this season, because we've seen it before. If things go awry after a few games, they've got the type of quarterback where they could make a change.
And this feels like a lot like 2016, where you have a guy who has had experience and a little bit, and you have the young guy that you like. Eventually, you're going to let that young guy play a little bit, and maybe there is a Georgia State moment in that Central Michigan game, you know what I mean? Like, where they're not playing very well, and you know, they bring in Graham Mertz to kind of jumpstart it. Maybe that's what happens. But as of right now, it's difficult to see. No, I'm not even gonna say it because it'll blow up in my face. But I feel like Jack Cohn's gonna be that guy. I think he's gonna be the starter against South Florida, but we're gonna see Graham Mertz a bunch.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far.
I was about to guarantee it, but I'm not going so far to say
I don't see a path for Graham to be the starter because he's just such an exceptional talent. But
sure,
it's just when will it come together enough for them to feel comfortable saying you're the guy, particularly when you've got this junior quarterback who is sort of the incumbent, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, he's got the most experience. So we'll be talking about this a lot in the coming weeks, I know.
All right, we've gone over the quarterbacks, which is what everybody has been paying attention to. But there's also certainly battles along the offensive line. Wisconsin loses, four starters, five guys overall. You know, Colvin Lennon essentially is a starter. Got him locked in at left tackle. You got Tyler Biadasz locked in at center. Logan Bruss feels like he has the upper hand at right tackle. The two guard spots were kind of the question. And in the teamwork that we got to see a little bit, Jason Urban was your left guard, and Josh Seltzner, in a little bit of a surprise, at least to me, based on what I, you know, in talking to Joe Rudolph on Wednesday, it was Josh Seltzner at right guard ahead of Caden Lyles. That competition, I think, is going to play out. Caden was with the twos at left guard. But did that surprise you just a little bit? Or, I mean, because Seltzner's a former walk-on, Jason Urban's a former walk-on, they've had a lot of success with those, but Caden, I thought, would be that guy.
Yeah, I agree. And again, like I said in the first segment, I don't want to read too much into whatever the first drill is, but it did a little bit. Now, we both talked to Joe Rudolph at Media Day, and I did think it was interesting. I mean, Joe said point blank, Caden's not going to play center this year. I mean, he doesn't want to heap too much on his plate. And while the spring was really important to cross-train these guys at multiple positions, now it's sort of locking down and figuring out what can I do well this season. So he can play either left guard or right guard. So in a pinch, if something were to happen to Tyler Biadasz, it would be Jason Erdman. But I do think that starts to help you figure out, like, what could this picture look like? Another guy is David Mormon, and I still think he certainly could be in contention, particularly based on what Joe said in the spring when he said that he was working his tail off, and of all the offensive linemen that had been participating, you know, he had looked the best at that point, saying, I want this spot. But I do think ultimately there's like four guys battling for those two guard spots, and the other three to me would seem to be pretty locked up, and then you've got Tyler Beach as your top reserve tackle. And that's the top eight.
Yeah. I think the Mormon thing is very interesting because he's also working at center, and I wouldn't be shocked if he's the backup center. Like, in talking to Joe, he said he was going to be the backup. Did he say Erdman?
I thought it was Erdman based on what
he said in the spring.
In talking to him yesterday at local media. And now I'm not saying, you know, this would only to me be in the event that something were to happen to Tyler. And if Erdman occupies one of the guard spots, then maybe that changes things. But either way, Caden Lyles won't be involved in that. Right. But I think that the beautiful thing about this Wisconsin offensive line in general is just Joe likes to cross-train these guys, and it makes them much more versatile and much more valuable. So if somebody goes down, it's not as big of a deal because you've got these guys who can move in and out. And that's also why I feel like this line, even though last year's line got all this attention with the Sports Illustrated cover, it almost seemed like, not that they were set up to fail last year, but because of how hyped up they were before the season, it was like, what would they have had to have achieved for them to live up to whatever you thought they were supposed to be? Because individually, those guys were really good. You look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, they were among the national leaders in a lot of these categories. But this year, they don't have that pressure, and I think they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, Cole Van Lennon was saying, people aren't talking about us, but we're going to go out and beat people's butts anyways. And we don't care what they say. They were building us up last year. Didn't matter. They're not building us up this year. They think we're going to suck. We're not going to suck. We're going to go out and beat people's butts. And that was, I like the way that he's a good talker, Cole. He'll give you good quotes. And I think he believes what he's saying. And it wasn't just that about the offensive line. It was the team in general, coming with vengeance, I believe, is what Zach Bond referred to as after what happened last year. And I'll get to that. I want to bring that up in a minute. But going back to David Mormon, for a guy that has not played a ton of snaps, he's a senior. Like most guys, if they don't play, especially scholarship guys, if they don't play early in their career, they're moving on. They're getting out. He hasn't. And Joe Rudolph loves him for that, loves his ability. He loves his ability. He thinks he's going to be at his best this year. Like, this is the best he's going to be. And he loves that he's put everything into the program, loves the program, does anything he's asked to, has played. I think he could play all five positions. I think, that's clear. And Joe said he wouldn't be surprised if he came out of camp as a starter. Like, that's the type of thing he is. And I can't remember a guy like that. And he mentioned Micah Capone. I'm like, well, yeah, Micah, started as a freshman, redshirt freshman. And so he thought back a little bit further, and he mentioned Mark Tauscher. Mark Tauscher did not play at all. Like, he was ready to go on and start a new job by the time, when his senior year was up. But he had another year that he'd come back and play, and he did. And we all know what happened with him going on and, playing the way he did and then getting into the NFL and playing as long as he did. Joe's not saying that that's what's going to happen, but a guy who barely has played at all of a sudden stepping up and playing potentially a big role as a senior, that could be David Mormon.
Yeah, it could. He's appeared in 40-plus games, and it may not have
almost
been
all of it has been like on
special teams.
Field goal. Like, that's essentially what he's been used as.
Right. I mean, yeah, I'm obviously side with Joe. I mean, I really think that they've got four guys that they feel pretty darn good about, that any of them could start at those guard spots. And that versatility and that depth of talent is really important for the offensive line. We've seen what it's been like when they have lacked depth, and while those guys developed into really quality players. I mean, you can't say enough good things about what this staff has been able to do to build up the depth at one of the most, if not the most important positions that Wisconsin has.
Right. Just to top off the offensive line, Logan Brown, Paul said they weren't sure, how much he can practice. He was out there, but he was limited. I don't know what that means. As they said, I'm not sure what limited means when all you're doing is wearing, helmets. He was still going through drills, but we'll see how long he's going to be limited moving forward. Other side of the ball, defensive line, Enoki Brechtefield, not an overly emotional guy. Like, when he's talking to the media, he doesn't get excited about, and he's kind of just a low talker, but you could tell he was excited that Garrett Rand and Isaiah Loudermilk are healthy. And he said he can't wait to unleash Garrett Rand after that year with the Achilles. And Isaiah Loudermilk down 14 pounds, mid-290s now, that which was what Brechtefield wanted, because he wants him to be more athletic. He thinks he's strong enough, long enough, but he needed to be more athletic. And those two guys changed the face of a defense, is what he said. And I couldn't agree more. Having those two guys, they, among the guys who were injured last year, those two guys, I think they missed more than anybody.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. I mean, if you don't generate a push up front, what do you have defensively? And those were the guys that they were going to rely on coming out of spring
run,
camp a
right?
year ago.
Stop the run. And that's, they had done it so well for so long, they did not do it last year. And that's, look, that is not, you can't, I mean, when you lost three guys in Sheehy, James, and Obasi, you needed those other two guys to stay in there and be there, and then they weren't. And so you had to rely on other guys,
right.
Caden Lyles, you know, and Matt Henningsen, an underweight Matt Henningsen. Having those two guys changes the face.
Yeah, last year was really kind of a worst-case scenario for Wisconsin's defensive line because you started the season opener with two guys who had never actually played in a Badgers uniform, one of whom came in as an offensive lineman and was essentially a rental player. If there is a silver lining to come out of that, though, I think it's what Matt Henningsen was able to do last season. And I talked to Anoka as well, and you could tell how much he valued the growth that Matt had made. And he said that his top three defensive ends now coming into the season, obviously, are Garrett, Isaiah, and Matt Henningsen, guys that you can, that you can absolutely rely on. And I think he feels pretty darn good about some of those younger defensive ends. You know, the guys like Boyd Dietzen and CJ Getz. I mean, he mentioned these guys by name, and there are several others. Isaiah Mullins as well, who I know he's high on. And even like David Pfaff, I think he said that David played something like 150 snaps last year is the number that he told me. And so obviously, this being a senior year, it's kind of time to take the step forward.
I think that's their five. I think it's Rand, Loudermilk, Henningsen, Pfaff, and Mullins. I think that's your top five. And then you mentioned some of the younger guys that will potentially be able to help. The bigger question, though, isn't it, is that nose tackle, where you have Bryson, who played a ton of football last year and will be better next year. But then behind him, it's, you know, Gunnar Roberg and Keanu Benton and Gio Paez.
Yeah.
Fighting for that backup job. And Paez and Benton, certainly size-wise, are ready to compete right away.
I did think that was interesting in talking to Anoka that he decided to put Gio at nose guard because I think there were some questions. Is he going to be a defensive end? Is he going to be a nose guard? Now, Rodas Johnson's coming in as a defensive end, but he wants to push the competition. And obviously, you know, he says Bryson's coming into the season as the starter, but he also made it clear in the team meeting yesterday that nothing's just handed to you.
Of course.
And you know, that's the obvious preseason statement, but I think we could all agree that Bryson is positioned to be that 3-year starter here for the next 3 years. But yeah, it's the big question because in spring practice they had two nose guards. Now, that's been a really important position for them. I don't know whether Keanu and Gio are going to be ready to do that this year. You know, I went up to Janesville in the spring and talked to Keanu and his high school coach, and his high school coach pulled up some film on him, and it's clear just how devastatingly powerful he is. But at the same time, his coach told me that there were instances where he was fairly undisciplined. Like, he wouldn't get leverage on smaller offensive linemen. And it wouldn't matter because he could blow by two people, but that's going to be a big problem in college. Now, any guy who makes the transition from high school to college is going to have things they need to correct. But I thought that was kind of an interesting point that the high school coach made. So it may take some time with him. And again, it's a position of need, obviously, and they need to develop some depth.
They do. Behind them, Chris Orr, I feel like, is primed for a huge year. You know, and talking to him in Chicago and then hearing the coaches talk about him, I think he's got an opportunity to be the guy. I think he is the guy on the defense, both in voice and in play, potentially. And then it's, you know, Jack Sanborn coming into a second year. We've talked about Leo Chanel, and he's up to 250 pounds, just an absolute load. And then Mike Mascalunas, and then Travis Wiltshire, which I think is a fun story. It's kind of an insane story for anybody that didn't hear it. He's the new transfer from Northwood University. He went there. It's a Division II school up in Michigan, which is where he's from. Played 3 years there. Was an honorable mention all-conference player. Was ready to give up football. He was done. He wasn't going to play again. And so he was down in Florida on a business trip, and on his way back had a layover in Chicago. And he's sitting at a Chili's eating with his boss. And all of a sudden, some guy sits down next to him. He looks to his right. Turns out it's Barry Alvarez. And they get to talking, and he talked about how he, you know, maybe he wanted to still play football. And Alvarez is like, all right, well, why don't you, you know, send your tape over to the coaches and see what they say. And if they like it, they'll give you a call. And he wasn't sure he was going to get a call, but he did get a call. And one thing led to another, and now he's here. And I think he's another potential guy that could help the depth there, but also special teams wise. And it's an interesting story. I think it's, how insane is it that you're ready to give football up? You're ready to go start a new job and, you know, in Florida, and all of a sudden you're playing college football at Wisconsin, the first guy at his school to ever come and play at a Big Ten school.
If ever there was a reason to believe in fate, that would be it, that you just happen to sit down and there's Barry Alvarez,
right.
Legendary AD,
right,
sitting next to you. And, you know, it's a great story, and obviously we haven't seen him yet, and we'll have to see what happens in fall camp, but I think there could be potential there, not knowing fully his skill set. You know, I know, right, he was like an all-conference type player at the Division II level,
if it's not worth it, you're not going to bring him in, right?
I wouldn't think so, but you know, I feel pretty comfortable with who those top three inside linebackers are at this point that we've mentioned, with Chris and Jack and Leo, who I can't say enough good things about. Not to hype him up too much before he's ever played a game, but just physically, he's just, it is ridiculous for a freshman, even when he came in as an early enrollee. And it wasn't just physically, it was the plays that he made during spring practice. Now he's got to continue that. But I think that's a pretty darn good top three. And Mascalunas has played before.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a potential there for someone else to emerge as a fourth linebacker.
All right. So we've gone offensive line, defensive line. We've talked about the quarterbacks. I do want to talk about the wide receivers, because I think there is an interesting development there in terms of the loss of weight by Danny Davis. He's down 10 pounds. Ted Gilmore, the wide receiver coach, joked that he's lost his baby fat, and he's committed. And I think, I don't want to say he wasn't committed before to putting in the work and all that type of stuff, because I don't think you can play major college football without putting in work, but I think he approached this offseason different. Now he has something still over his head right now in terms of the Quintez Cephas trial and having to deal with that, and so we haven't been able to talk to him since last August, but he looks the part, and I think he's as talented as any receiver Wisconsin's had. It's about, you know, being and not having those distractions, not letting those things distract you, and putting in the effort. And if it sounds like, from all accounts, that he's locked in.
There's no question he can be the difference maker in this wide receiver group, and we saw it as a true freshman, the way he could come in and be that downfield threat and catch passes with one hand. And all you have to do is turn on the tape of the fourth quarter of the Purdue game when he caught those two unbelievably great touchdown passes that saved Wisconsin and allowed Jonathan Taylor to take over in those three overtimes. Yeah, they need that from him. Now, I mean, A.J. Taylor has been a constant. He's gotten better every season, and based on what we saw the last spring practice where he was totally dominant, I think he had 7 catches of 10-plus yards, and it didn't matter who they put back there at cornerback. That was encouraging. But Danny is such a dynamic threat that anything extra you can get from him is going to be special. And last year was difficult circumstances as well. You know, he was suspended for the first two games, and I think that takes some steam out of you, and it takes a little time to get back into the groove, and the passing game as a whole just wasn't where it needed to be. But, you know, if he's faster, if he's more confident by losing that weight, if he can gain that little bit extra of separation, that can make all the difference for this offense.
Yeah, so I think there was some talk last year about the wide receivers not being able to gain separation, like they weren't getting open and that type of stuff, and I asked Ted Gilmore about that and asked him if he agreed. He said, absolutely not. That, like, as a wide receivers coach, absolutely not. I don't agree with that at all. But what he did say was they need to be better in the first 5 yards. They need to be better at the line of scrimmage. And so he said, Kendrick Pryor, said A.J. Taylor, said Danny Davis, even Aaron Cruikshank, they're stronger than they were last year. And so instead of trying to dance at the line of scrimmage to get around guys, it's going to be about getting, you know, getting the corner out of their way. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be about being physical with the corner and getting them off their spot, as opposed to the corner knocking them off of their spot. And that, to me, will help them gain separation, will help them get open, will help them provide open targets for the quarterbacks. And, you know, to be honest, will help them potentially get down the field and make some plays down the field, which is not what they didn't do it last year. And Gilmore said that was not really their call. They would have loved to have done it. But I feel like it's going to be kind of like we've talked about with Jonathan Taylor getting the ball in the passing game. They're going to force the ball there. I think they're going to force the ball down the field, because they did not do that nearly well enough. And if teams are going to stack the box with 8 guys and 9, you have to take advantage of it. You have to push the ball down the field just as a threat. And Danny Davis shows a freshman he can go down the field. And the same thing, I think A.J. Taylor has the speed to take the ball down the field. And KP has the ability to go up and get a pass. And Aaron Cruikshank can make all types of plays with his speed. They have the ability. They have to go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who develops as that fourth receiver. If it is Cruikshank, how much do they actually use him? Because when you think about, you go on down the line, well, you've got these top three receivers. You've got Jake Ferguson, who's one of the best tight ends in the Big Ten already as a redshirt sophomore coming into this year. And then whatever checkdowns you may make to a fullback, or how many passes you want to throw to Jonathan Taylor, I just wonder how much is left over for that fourth receiver. But if you've got someone as dynamic as an Eric Cruikshank, who can beat people on the outside, you don't just have to pigeonhole him as a slot guy because he's small. That's just another added element that can make this team great. But you've got so many other guys. I mean, I know in the last spring practice, and I'm going back to this a lot, but it's the last time we actually saw him, I think Kendrick Pryor was out, and when they went to a 3-receiver set, Jack Dunn was that third wide receiver. And so those are a couple options, Adam Krumholtz and a lot of other young guys, but there's good competition there after that top three. And if you are that fourth guy, you could make some inroads. I just don't know how much you'll make in a game.
Yeah. Taj Mustafa, A.J. Abbott, two guys that we didn't see a bunch last year, though Taj did have a touchdown. Physically, they looked the part, and I'm interested to see if they can, you know, take it to the next level. And, you know, Cade Green, finally healthy, was out on the practice field today catching punts. Cruikshank could also be involved in that. And what about Jack Dunn, who certainly played a bunch last year? You wonder where he could be. Adam Krumholtz, where does he fit in? They have a bunch of bodies at wide receiver past that top three that could all figure in at that fourth spot. But we'll see. You mentioned Jake Ferguson, the tight ends. It is Jake Ferguson. And then it's Luke Benshall, who is monstrous. He is up to 283, I believe, is what Jake Ferguson said yesterday. 283 is a tight end. They don't even have to move over, guys. They don't even need a jumbo tight end anymore. He's their jumbo tight end to go along with his ability to catch the ball. Well, I said that to Joe Rudolph. I'm like, you don't even have it. You know, there's no need for a jumbo tight end anymore. You don't need to move an offensive lineman over there. You got Benshall. And he said, yeah, but we'll actually throw him the ball. So, and he said he did say that he was about at that weight in the bowl game. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I'll take his word at it.
Yeah, now he caught a touchdown pass that was called back in that bowl game. And when I was talking to tight ends coach Mickey Turner at local media day, he's like, that play right there shows me that he knows how to catch intermediate routes. And so I think that's, he's shown it in practice, but it's translating it from the practice to the game. But I mean, that's a major talking point is you have Jake Ferguson and you have an entire tight end group that officially has not caught a single pass in college. And it's like, well, where is it going to come from? Now, I think if you've got Jake and you've got Luke in there, they'll be pretty solid. But one thing that Mickey did say is in fall camp, they're going to do a lot of two tight end sets, but in multiple groupings. So you'll have your 11 offensive guys over here and another 11 over here. And so you can get four tight ends going at the same time. So there's going to be a lot of learning.
It's kind of what we saw today.
Yeah. And he's very high on the two freshmen, Hayden Rucci and Clay Cundiff. Those guys came in, they're both over 250. So physically, like, they are ready to play. And Mickey said, I mean, he's not going to hold anyone back. Like, this is your opportunity. If you want to earn playing time, you can do it. He says sometimes there's a true freshman that comes in and he say, I don't know. I think he's probably going to need to redshirt. It may take a while. But no, these guys are going to have their opportunity because they are there to be had.
Well, and think about it. Gabe Lloyd, having surgery. Coy Wehner wasn't out there today. So throw those two guys out. You're already missing without Kyle Penniston. So your three guys that were in the depth last year, no longer there right now. And so, yeah, it allows for that. I mean, that's why Seth Kearns is getting some run over there, because I think they were down to, was it six tight ends? At least going through drill today, it was five or six?
Six.
Yeah.
I was taking notes. It is six.
Right. So they have, I mean, there's opportunity for those freshmen to play right away. And again, the four games allows for it to happen when it happens. And, you know, if they're good enough to play through the four, they're good enough to play through the four. The other place where we saw that play out last year was in the secondary. And in talking to Jim Leonard yesterday, he said if they had been healthy, Reggie Pearson and Travion Blaylock would have played through the entire year if they had been healthy. They're now healthy to go along with, and Travion Blaylock is huge for a corner. He's over 200 pounds. He is ripped as all get out. I'm surprised that they're keeping him at corner. But either way, the numbers that they have at the safety spot and the corner spot has to make you feel good to be able to pick and choose from.
I mean, I think that the secondary obviously is the strength of defense. I did a kind of a position preview going into the season, and I ranked each position group based on like the least question marks to the most, and cornerback and safety were, you know, my top two back there. And I know, look, you can make
Wait. Didn't you say cornerback was the strongest position coming out of spring?
I hope I did, because that would mean maybe I know what I'm talking about. I don't know. I feel like you're making fun of me.
No, you said that was your biggest question.
Did I?
Did you just say your biggest question? Or
I don't think so.
Did I completely just mishear that?
I have to go back and roll
the tape. I'm just saying like right now.
No. I was saying maybe I misspoke just now. I listed them from the position groups that had the least questions to the most questions.
I misheard you.
And so I guess you could say the most stable. How about that? So the top was cornerback and safety. So to me, they were the most stable position groups coming in now that we've cleared that
out of the way. Sorry.
And I know you can make the argument that, like, look, they've got four or five or six guys that they were rotating, and if Jim Leonard isn't set on someone, does that mean that they must not be that good? I mean, I don't see it that way. I think there's a lot of competition, and you saw. I mean, they moved Madison Cone. Now he's going to be a safety. Now I think he could have been, you know, that top nickel corner, but obviously they've got a lot of other guys.
He's going to be, actually. I mean, maybe not the top guy, but they're going to keep working him in the nickel as well.
But that speaks to how much depth they have at corner, and obviously I think before they only had five scholarship safeties, I think they're going to be good. I know they're very high on Fan Hicks, certainly, and Caesar Williams has the potential to be in there, but so do a lot of other guys.
Yeah.
And so they're certainly not going to be the weak link. I mean, I think, you know, if you're a quarterback and you start throwing back down there, you know, they've got the athletes and the skill to make you pay for that.
Again, Scott Nelson is the guy, and I think Eric Brell probably is your other guy, but I don't know if it stays that way, at least right now. Like, the way that they finished the season, I thought Scott Nelson had his best game against Miami. Like, some of his ability to come up and tackle was missing at times last year, I thought. But he
acknowledged that in the spring, which I thought was interesting.
He had a great play in the bowl game on an end around where he came up and tripped a guy up, and he looked good there, and you hope that is going to grow because they were so high on him coming into last year. And Eric Burrell, I think, is probably the other safety, but you have other options. Reggie Pearson, who just laid on a ton of big hits in the spring. And, it's not a bad problem to have. You'd love to be able to reach in on guys and just point to this guy and he's going to be your guy. I wonder if Jim Leonard is able to do that. I don't know if he's going to be able to.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I mean, I think eventually, obviously, he'll identify his starting group, but he'll feel confident enough to put in a third or a fourth guy. And you're right, Reggie Pearson, he made the two deep out of camp last year, but then he got hurt and wound up playing in just the four games. But he started that game against Michigan. He knocked a ball loose. I mean, he is a hard hitter, and I've said this before, but he and Leo were the two hardest hitting guys in spring practice. If you looked up and there was a huge bang, it was coming from one of those two guys. But even like Colin Wilder, the transfer from Houston, you know, Jim Leonard was very high on him because he does have experience, and that's valuable. And Titus Toler, the incoming safety who went to St. John Bosco, which is the same school that Spencer Lytle went to, like, that's a powerhouse high school program. He was committed to Colorado forever until they fired the coach, and now he's at Wisconsin. So if you're a Badgers fan, you've got to be excited about how much talent is not only back there, but all over this team. There's a lot of potential.
Yeah. Outside linebacker spots, I probably should have talked about that when we talked about the linebackers, but you got Zach Bond, and then you got...
fill in the blank.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, they're expecting Zach to take the next step. And talking to Bobby April yesterday, he wants Bond to play with a little bit more confidence, which is, you know, a little bit surprising just because I feel like Zach has a ton of confidence and it feels like he plays with a ton of confidence. But he said last year that he was just playing and, you know, was just out there playing for the first time, truly, truly playing out there for the first time. I think he could have a big year, but it's the other side that you have to be worried about just in terms of not knowing who it's going to be. Noah Burks, Tyler Johnson, Spencer Lytle, Christian Bell, like, throw in names here. Jalen Franklin, Isaiah Green-May. Like, you have all these names of guys that are out there and have flashed at times, but none has proven to be a player, truly proven to be a player. We saw Tyler a little bit a couple years ago, but that spot is going to be key because without the pass rush that the outside linebackers and the defensive line, for that matter, have given them, it exposed the secondary last year, and it made things even more difficult than they already were.
During the spring, Noah Burks was that guy. It doesn't mean that that's going to be the case this season. I thought that was certainly interesting because I think he had like 8 career tackles, but you had to put someone there. I was a little surprised because I thought it would be Tyler Johnson based solely on the experience. I know he played in 31 games. He started twice last year when Andrew Van Ginkle got hurt, but he worked pretty much with the second team. And I mean, Isaiah Green-May is a guy that you've got to be excited about. When they went to their nickel package, he was in there with Bond. I mean, he's... the length and the athleticism and the ability to disrupt passes is just, that's, you can't teach some of that.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to get an opportunity, and I don't know what we're going to see from Christian Bell. Like, he didn't participate in spring practice. Now is the time to make a move, but I feel like I said that last year. And how about Spencer Lytle? Like, gained the most weight of anybody on the roster. Now, I mean, I always wonder about weights. Like, when did they measure the weight? Was it when they first got here? And but either way, that dude has a chance to be pretty special. I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but certainly there's an opportunity there.
Physically there. Bobby April said he does need to get stronger still at 223, but physically it looks like he's ready. He'll be have the opportunity to play at some point. All right, I wanted to talk about a few things that were said about last year when I had an opportunity to chat with those guys. And the one that really stood out was Zach Bond and him talking about, we're coming with a vengeance this year. And I asked him, you know, what does that mean? He goes, well, we did not live up to the standard of what Wisconsin football was last year. And that can't happen. And and Chris Orr said something very similar at Media Days in Chicago saying, you know, it takes attitude. We have to get back to being who we are. We need to make people feel us when we're playing. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe this is just a defensive thing. Maybe it's just the defense is talking like this. So I went over and asked Cole Van Landen about it. And he said, no, it's a team-wide thing. It's the standard. He didn't go out and say the standard is a standard, which is a saying for a different podcast. But he said 8-5, that's not who we are. And the feeling that we had at 13-1 was not there last year. It's there again. People thought you could just walk in and be 13-1, and it didn't. That's not how this works. You have to put in the effort. You have to put in the time. And these guys, we've had a lot of guys that know the greatness of 13-1 and the really crappy feeling of 8-5. And we feel like it's going to be a situation that guys are approaching this the way we approach 13-1 as opposed to the way they approached last year.
Obviously, last year was incredibly humbling for these guys, and a lot of them have said that I'm not going to say we're responsible, but when we're writing about how good they're supposed to be coming off the school record 13 wins, and you're asking them questions about how good you can be, they're 18 to 22-year-old college athletes. I mean, they're going to listen to that, and I think that plays a role at least a little bit. And Paul Christ talked about this some in Chicago at Big Ten Media Day as well. Like, that's a very real thing that you have to deal with, particularly with younger players. Like, when people are telling you how good you are, yeah, you think you just show up and you're going to beat teams. And it was pretty evident that that's not how it went down last year. But I think if you're a fan, you know, it's certainly encouraging to hear how motivated they are. It's funny, like, every year there's a storyline, either you're favored to be great or you're not favored. I mean, a few years ago when people thought they were going to 7-5, they wound up winning 10 or 11 games and winning the West. And so it's good for them to be motivated, and obviously they were humbled last year.
Right. That's what I was going to say. This is different this year because they're coming off. This is the first time Paul Christ has had to deal with adversity in terms of coming off a season where they were so great and the expectations were so high, and he didn't get close to meeting them. And now you're at a situation where, was that a blip or was that the sign of something to come? And he was asked about it. I actually thought he gave a pretty good answer about it, saying, we can't talk about it. It's not going to be what we say. We can say, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to be great and we're going to do all that stuff, but it doesn't matter what we say. Our actions are going to show what kind of team we are. Our actions are going to show whether that was a blip or that whether there was something, there's something wrong and there's going on, it's going back down. And so he realized it. I was surprised for him to actually acknowledge it. But it's real. It's real. People are asking that question, and it's a worthwhile question to ask.
I thought it was interesting that Paul acknowledged that he coached a little different. I mean, he's going to coach a little bit different just in the way they approach things in practice. He talked about it, like, even in the spring, you know, it's that situational awareness. It's knowing, you know, if you're backed up in the end zone, you got to have ball security. I mean, that may sound obvious, but like, the way he put it, they are teaching things in a different way to make it more clear to these guys that when they get in those situations in a game, they'll be able to handle it better. And so, you know, you start from the top on down, right? I know Paul does that every year, but last year when you look in the mirror, and he acknowledged it, like, as a coach, you want to put him in the best position to win, and I don't know that we did that last year. And so I thought it was interesting that he acknowledged he kind of had that self-evaluation and is willing to make some changes, and we'll see whether it materializes during the games this fall.
We will. We have a ways to go before our games, 29 days. Obviously, the quarterback battle is something that everyone's going to be watching, but do you have any under-the-radar things that you're going to be looking out for in terms of whether it's the backup running back spot or who, you know, the odds line? What is there anything that stands out to you that is going to be a story here these next 29 days?
I feel like we've covered pretty much everything.
We have.
But yeah, I mean, I do want to see, like, what's the offensive line grouping that Joe Rudolph actually decides to go with, and who will be that backup running back?
Bradrick was out there taking reps today, and he looked good. I mean, he was the number two backup. It was him and then Nakia Watson and then Isaac Garendo. But yeah, I mean, Bradrick Shaw has put so much time in and trying to come back from what was a devastating injury. That was November of 2017. It's been a long, long time since he's played football. I'm rooting for him to get back and be able to play because he's worked so hard. But I feel like Nakia Watson is a better option than Bradrick Shaw at this point. And so we'll see when the pads come on and they start hitting whether Bradrick's able to hold up. But even a healthy Bradrick Shaw, at times, at least, you know, once in 2017, he wasn't the same guy he was in 2016. You know what I mean?
He wasn't as explosive as yards per carry went down drastically. I feel like the year before it was something like 5.7 yards, and then it was like under four. Right. But again, he was hurt, and you're right. I mean, the coaching staff and Paul is clearly rooting for Bradrick. He's talked openly about it, and anytime you see a kid go through adversity like that and have something taken away that long, you want to see them succeed. But you're right. I think the good news is they have a lot of options, and that's why it's so intriguing. And whoever the backup is, you're going to get carries. They know Jonathan carried 307 times last year, but if I'm not mistaken, the backup running backs carried a total of something like 170 times last year. So there's opportunities there, and it's a very important part. We saw what Tywan Deal did last year. That is huge to have a guy who can come in and get you 500-plus yards on the season and maybe six touchdowns.
You won a bet, didn't you, with that? Didn't you? An over-under on that?
Of anything that happened last season, I'm most proud of that. Before the season, the over-under on Tywan Deal yards at 500, I picked the over, and he made it. So that's my claim to fame.
Yeah. We didn't talk special teams at all. The kicking job, Paul Chris said he was asked if it was wide open, and the answer was yep. And he was asked if he had a favorite, and he said, nope, it's wide open. but it feels like Colin Larsch would be the guy tomorrow.
Well, he's at least kicking first for whatever it's worth. And it was funny because like we only got the first 30 minutes of practice today, and I had my phone out like, okay, maybe this will be worth some video, and Larsch comes up in the first group. And it's like a fake snap. There's like no ball. So like they're not even to the point where they're kicking field goals so you can see how they're doing. But I do think that he's the guy who's in position. You know, Zach hints to, I feel like it'll play out this way. And obviously next 4 weeks will determine it, that Colin will be the guy. But if you get in a long range field goal scenario, you may feel more comfortable with hints because I know he kicked a 60 plus yarder last year. He didn't make it, but he's got the state record. It was like a 61, 62 yard field goal that he made. And it was a St. Mary Springs or something like that. So that's the way I would think it would play out, but Paul's not willing to give an inch, so I'll wait to see what happens.
And then, you know, Anthony Lottie, a senior now, has been up and down, I would say. Now, some of that isn't his fault, considering where they're punting sometimes. when you're punting from your opponent's 35-yard line, it's not always easy to have the type of distance you want, but it feels like that's his job. Punt returner, Jack Dunn was the guy last year, but they had Kate Green back there. They had Aaron Cruikshank back there. I feel like they haven't done a great job under Chris in the punt return game. They had the one against Michigan, the punt return off that kind of the Nick Nelson off the bounce, but that was still only like a 38-yard return because such a shady punt. But I feel like they could be better in the return game.
Yeah, they need to be more dynamic. You need a guy who's going to take care of the football. That's most important, which I feel like that's kind of why they have Jack in there, but you need more than 5.5 yards of punt return just to give you something. But, you know, I did want to go back to the punting with Anthony Lottie because, you know, I talked to Anthony after the last spring practice and I talked to his dad, and I think it is an interesting point to note when you look at, like, net punting yardage and you think, like, ah, he's so much worse. It's like, well, I think, what was the number? It was like half of his punts last year were from the other side of the field, you know, the opponent's side of the field, and so that's going to impact it. But I think the other thing is, if you notice, like, he was wearing a brace on his plant leg the entire season, and, you know, it was never acknowledged, but I do know that on the last spring practice, he didn't participate, and when I talked to him after, you know, he downplayed it, but he did say he was having some patella tendon problems, and so hopefully he's got that taken care of and can be better this year. But, you know, I think there's more that goes into it than just looking at the net punting yardage and saying, well, he must not be very good. And I don't know how healthy he was last year. So if he's healthier, I think you're going to see a better Anthony Lottie in his senior season.
I talk about kick return, but there's so few kick returns these days, for the most part, that who really cares? But kick return, I know they've had different guys back there, but
Aaron Cruikshank is the guy to me. I mean,
yeah,
he was, I think, pretty decent for a true freshman in that role last
Fearless.
Year.
Fearless. A guy that small, he's still only 160 pounds. A guy that small running that fast into that, you have to be different to do that. Like, and mentally different. You have to be like it. It's just crazy. Same thing with punt return. To have those guys screaming down, you have to be different. And, you know, I think he was close to breaking one or two, and maybe this is the year it happens, but, you know, kick return is soon going to go the way of
the dodo bird,
yes,
or something that is more current.
Yeah,
but he did. You know, that last spring practice, he returned one 50 plus yards, a kick return, and so like you see that is there, and all it takes is one or two, and you just break a game wide open. And I think if you went down the list and said who has the most game changing ability or who's the fastest, like It's Aaron Cruickshank.
Aaron Cruickshank, Isaac Guerrero, yeah. I think, has that kind of ability as well. Maybe we'll get to see it in special teams at some point, but those two guys could certainly run. Next practice that's open to the media is on Monday, and then we'll get a kind of a steady drip of that, and then practice is closed August 16th, and I'm sure we'll know the quarterback by then, of course, right? But anxious to see how this fall camp plays out, anxious to see how the quarterback plays out, anxious to see how they bounce back from what was a disappointing year. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. So you've been listening to The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.